And now, get ready to smile again with radio's home folks, Vic and Sade. Vic and Sade, written by Paul Reimer, is brought to you each weekday by the makers of Crisco. And now, here's another in our series of ration snapshots, or how to put the bee on the bird.
Jimmy, get away from that icebox and stop picking up that chicken, or there won't be any for dinner.
Gosh, Mom, there's not enough to feed a bird.
Now, you'd be surprised how far I can make it go with a little cream sauce or maybe some croquettes.
Gee whiz, isn't there anything else you can do with chicken?
You bet there is, son. You tell your mom to put her Crisco to work on some of those swell-tasting chicken-filled pancakes. That's what Crisco's for, to help give you point-saving meals that taste like a million. And Crisco's chicken-filled pancakes will do just that, you betcha. You simply make thin pancakes, spread with ground leftover chicken. Roll up and serve with a creamy Crisco gravy. Good? Mmm. And really digestible, too. Sure, pancakes or any Crisco fried foods are easy to digest. Of course, fried foods aren't the only way Crisco takes the strain off your red ration book. No, no. Did you know that Crisco comes to the fore any time you're stumped by a wartime meal problem? That's right. Delicious gravies for low-point meat, shortcakes and biscuits for rounding out a lean meal, and smooth-as-velvet white sauces that put a touch of magic on leftovers. Why, you can count on Crisco to turn the trick in any recipe that calls for shortening. And that sure saves tying up points in a lot of fat. Crisco's the finest quality shortening money can buy, pure and all vegetable. And yet it takes not a point more than the very cheapest shortening. Only 5 points for a pound of Crisco. And accepting butter or margarine for your table, it's the only fat you need. Why, you couldn't ask for better red point economy, could you? Try Crisco and discover what a lot of good eating you can get from those red ration points that you have to spend. And now, back to Vic and Say. Well, sir, it's late afternoon as we approach the small house halfway up on the next block now, and here on the front porch we find Mr. and Mrs. Victor Cook. Mr. Victor Cook has newly arrived home from the office, and he's gazing discontentedly at a heap of chains and a wooden swing to which his wife has just directed his attention.
You didn't drag this junk up from the basement by yourself, did you?
Naturally not.
Well, who helped you?
Mr. Gunpar.
Why didn't he help you hang the swing while he was about it?
What?
Nothing.
Goodness, how you mutter to yourself anymore?
I crooned to myself. See, I love myself. Victor's a sweetheart, I crooned.
Victor sure is. Well, gonna take off your coat and put up the swing?
Seems to me I'm ordered about in a highly despotic manner.
I'll say.
Since I'm the party who's saddled with the task of putting up the swing, strikes me I should choose my own time for putting up the swing. What was it the poet Keats said to the poet Browning when he held a dandelion under his chin to determine whether or not he liked butter? I believe history tells us that he chuckled foolishly and twisted his cap into a damp wad. And then...
See how jobs get handled around here. All talk and no action. You say you ought to choose your own time. Well, when would that time have been? Next Christmas? Look up and down the block. Every living soul and their brother's got their porch swing up at us. Every living soul and their brother. And here it is, the summer half over.
I'll have to quarrel with that statement, Dr. Sleech. The summer is not half over. We've barely gotten our teeth into the summer. Harking back to the poet Keats again, just to point up and round out my point, permit me to quote from his early work entitled, My Naked Feet Are Drooping Flowers, Miser William. In the third stanza of
Talk. Person gets so tired of talk sometimes. You could have had the darn porch swing up by now. You could have been sitting in it by now.
I could have been stretched out at full length by now.
Sure.
I don't want to weary you with too many references to the poet Keats, but his biographers tell an amusing story where it seems that he yearned to kiss a certain pretty girl whose name was Sally Sue Skinkletrap. Isn't that a piquant name? Well, anyway, the poet Keats chucked pretty Sally Sue under the chin and said, I know I'm a bold man.
I am going in the house.
In the house?
Yeah.
You mean I have to put up the porch swing by myself?
I hold it out of the basement. I think I've done my part.
You're putting up a porch swing is a two-man job.
It is not.
It takes one guy to slip the chains on the hook.
Oh, that's ridiculous, and you know it. Mercy, how people will use up energy trying to get out of using up energy. Like old Mr. Bainbridge there in Dixon.
The telephone's ringing.
Well, that's Ruthie.
It's probably Richigan Fishigan from Shishigan, Michigan calling.
Wait,
up to
that's
find
Ruthie.
Out. How on earth can you tell the truth?
Because she said she'd call.
You're going to answer, huh?
Wouldn't you if you were me? Don't start crying, Vic. Here come a couple of nice helpers.
Where?
Out in front. Russell and Uncle Fletcher. Hello, fellas.
Hello. Afternoon, Sadie. Afternoon, Vic.
Greetings, friends.
I have to go in and answer the telephone.
Come on up, neighbors. I'm just about to cut a cold watermelon, and there's a big red juicy slice for all.
That's right, Rick.
How are you, Retter?
I'm pretty good.
What's that green stuff on your shirt?
Grass stain.
Oh, I thought it was blood.
No, grass stain.
Pretty weather, Vic.
That's the time you hit the nail right on the head.
Today's exactly like a day we had in Dixon in 1909. August 8th, 1909. I never seen 2 days so much alike. Put them up alongside each other and you couldn't tell them apart. August 8th, 1909. I'll never forget that day.
Neither will I.
Go on, you wasn't even born then.
I don't know whether you guys are familiar with the poet Keats or not, but they tell an amusing little story on him.
Yes, well, I wouldn't know anything about that.
Yes, Sade.
Beg pardon?
He's not talking to you.
Fine.
You holler, Sade.
Frank Ruby want to know how we feel about 500 this evening.
Oh, boy, hot stuff. Make a date.
We'll go there.
We sure will. Make no mistakes. Where's my hat?
What's all that?
I'm afraid you better tell Fred my foot didn't hardly quit hurting there where the little yellow roses cost me $4 and a tired horse sat on Harold's lap. I just got as much self-respect as the next man, but if 9 doctors only give Mrs. Hunkerman 30 years to live, I just can't help crying and gnashing my teeth and...
Oh, how smart, smart, smart.
Oh, you're right there, Sage.
Yes, I left the telephone and walked clear to the door here so I could hear what you were telling me. Well, now I can walk back, I guess.
I'm all mixed up on what you people are talking about.
You're just joking.
Uh-huh.
Have you got the swing up yet?
Not quite.
Almost, though. Hmm.
I would put it like this. I would
you
say...
You haven't even touched the swing yet, have you?
Not manually, no. However, in a figurative sense, I think it may be...
I've got Ruthie waiting on the telephone. We'll play tonight, then?
Yes, let's do.
I don't think you'd better handle the pork swing, Russell. There's nails underneath that might scratch, and it's a heavy thing and might get loose and fall on your toes.
Bye.
Kiddo, kind of a funny thing happened at the office this afternoon. Me and me suffer were standing chewing the rag by the telephone switchboard.
I can't keep Ruthie waiting any longer. Please put up the pork swing.
The ladies are impatient creatures.
Chicago, Burlington, and Quincy.
Yes.
You've probably got old Pete McStingle in mind.
No, I have.
The Chicago, Burlington, and Quincy Railroad and old Pete McStingle. They go hand in hand.
They sure do.
I'm all mixed up in what you're talking about now.
Really, Russell?
You said ladies were impatient creatures. Then Uncle Fletcher said Chicago, Burlington, and Quincy. And then you said yes. Gosh, it doesn't make any sense.
No, it didn't.
Russell's a good boy.
Uh-huh.
If I give you a violin, could you play a tune on it?
No.
Ernie Spotter's good.
Who's Ernie Spotter?
A Belvedere fella I used to know. Give him a violin, he'd play a tune on it. Give him a guitar, and he'd play a tune on it. Give him a mouth organ, and he'd play a tune on it.
Uh-huh.
One day, a bunch of the lads that hung around the section gang's tool chanty decided they'd play a joke on Ernie. They got hold of an anvil and wrapped it up in oilcloth and tied some string around it and give it to Ernie and says, Ernie, play a tune on this.
What'd Ernie do?
Nothing. He just sat there.
Well, what's the point?
Yes. Tell you another wild stunt Ernie Spotter's pulled off. He bought a pair of shoes and wore them to work every day for 6 weeks. I then took them back to the shoe store and tried to get the clerk to exchange them.
Did the shoe clerk do it?
No, sir. The shoe clerk says, Brother, I don't know whether I can whip you or not, but if you're not out of here by the time I count to 15, I'm sure going to try.
Well.
Ernie Spotter's dead now. Loved apples and hated fish. Right-handed and left-handed both. His cousin gave me a box of candied pineapple on Christmas by mistake. I ate it.
You gonna put up the porch swing?
Yes, I thought I would.
Looks like a real good one.
Oh, it's good enough porch swing as porch swings go.
We're the only people in the block that haven't got a porch swing in their porch.
Will we remedy that in a hurry?
Another funny thing about Ernie Spotters, he never trusted smoking tobacco. Chew, yes. Smoke, no. He thought smoking tobacco would explode.
What?
Chew. Yes. Smoke? No.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
What was the name of that man Mr. McClellan was telling us about that said he worked at the same bank with Fred in Clinton, Iowa?
Walsh.
I know who.
Say it again.
Walsh.
I know who. Vic.
Who?
Walsh. Vic, I know who.
Ruthie wanted to know.
Walsh. Harry Walsh.
The Walsh I know was a woman. Minnesota Walsh. And here's a coincidence. I just got through telling you about Ernie Spotters that would chew but not smoke. Minnesota Hooch's brother George was the other way around.
He'd smoke, but he wouldn't chew.
Yes. Smoke, yes. Chew, no.
Uh-huh.
Ernie Spotters. Chew, yes. Smoke, no. George Hooch?
Smoke, yes. Chew, no.
That's right.
It's a topsy-turvy world.
Chicago, Burlington, and Quincy.
Oh, yes, Chicago, Burlington, and Quincy.
Hey, now, wait a minute.
Smoke, yes. Yeah. There's a lesson there if we want to learn it.
Yes, indeed.
Are you going to put up the porch swing now?
Why, yes, I think I will.
Four swings are dandy for sitting in.
You can't beat them.
A rock or something's right under my foot. I think I'll take my shoe off.
Do that.
Fine.
You are going to put up the four swing now?
Yes.
I wouldn't know anything about that, of course, but I do recall another odd peculiarity of Ernie Spotter's. Ernie used to take an ordinary kitchen mop.
I think y'all folks got me to complain before long we're wearing out their wires.
Grab that chain, Uncle
Fletcher. Yeah, Ruthie and me get on that telephone. We just sit and talk our heads off.
Grab a hold of the port string.
I will.
No, you won't, Uncle Fletcher.
I got my shoe off.
But that don't hurt.
It does, too, hurt. That's why I took it off.
How long we talked that time, Dick? Must have been close.
I took my shoe off, Sadie.
You haven't got the port swing up yet, huh, Dick?
No.
Get out of the way.
Sadie, I know
you... Get out of the way.
Can I help put off the port?
Put on the railing or someplace, Lethal.
All right.
Sadie, I was just telling Vic
here
about...
Will you stand over to one side, please, Uncle Fletcher?
Fine.
I'll take care of this.
Oh, Sadie, I know
you... Get out of the way. Get out of the way. Everybody, get out of the way.
Which concludes another brief interlude at the small house halfway up in the next block. Forget to listen to Crisco's Bake and Save the next time. This is Ed Roberts speaking.
Well, are you all set for winter? You got your coal in? Are your storm windows ready?
Now, wait a minute, Mr. Starr. We just got our screens up. The grass needs cutting, and my victory garden's just coming up. This is summer.
Sure it's summer. So the government says, get ready for next winter.
I don't get it.
Well, now look. It's going to be just as cold next winter as last, isn't it?
Yes.
And the fuel situation isn't going to be any better than last winter. Unless everybody helps out by ordering his coal or oil for heating ahead of time, this summer.
But how will that help?
Well, if your fuel dealers can order next winter's supply now, they can deliver it during the summer. That'll save time and railroad space for deliveries next fall. And everyone will get more fuel.
Well, why didn't I think of that?
But that's not all.
No?
No, sir. You need storm windows and weather stripping and insulation. They save fuel and save you money, too. And don't forget, oil is going to be plenty scarce next winter, too. So if you can convert your oil furnace to coal, convert now, while there's still manpower and materials available.
Oh, it's just like the ant and the grasshopper, getting ready for winter in the summer.
That's right. If you want to be warm, prepare for next winter now.
This program came to you from Chicago and New York. This is the National Broadcasting Company.